Hi, class. Today we're going to talk about Victorian poetry. We've had this PowerPoint for a while, but now I want to put a lecture to it. We're going to talk about the concepts, poems, and comparisons. This will be first of two Victorian poetry lectures. The second one will mush into our Victorian realism lecture. Let's talk about concepts first. Some concepts you want to know when you're talking about Victorian poetry are double poems, poetical allegory, physiological poetry, dramatic monologue, sonnet sequences, and ekphrasis. So let's review some of these concepts now. All right, I'm going to read a poem that you should have read as well called In an Artist's Studio. It's one of the famous poems of Christina Rossetti. The subject of it is probably her brother's studio and also her brother's relationship with his lover or wife, Elizabeth Siddal, who you've probably seen her image before. She was one of the most famous models in the Victorian period, and everyone painted her. So, one face looks out from all his canvases. One self-same figure sits or walks or leans. We found her hidden just behind those screens. That mirror gave back all of her loveliness. A queen in opal or in ruby dress. A nameless girl in freshest summer greens. A saint, an angel. Every canvas means the same one meaning, neither more nor less. He feeds upon her face by day and night, and she with true kind eyes looks back on him, fair as the moon and joyful as the light. Not wan with waiting, not with sorrow dim, not as she is, but was when hope shone bright. Not as she is, but as she fills his dream. All right, let's go over some of the concepts we can see in this poem. First, this is a sonnet, and we've identified the octave. We have an A-B-B-A-A-B-B-A rhyme scheme, which probably means this is a Petrarchan sonnet. Now we have the sestet. It's A-B-A-B-A-B with a slant rhyme with dream. All right, one of the things we see here is a lot of anaphora. Anaphora is a technique where you have, or you repeat the first word in a line, so it's like initial rhyme. So the rhyme is in the front instead of the back, although there's rhyme in the back as well. It's used a lot in speeches, and it gives emphasis. Here we also have two things that you should be able to identify. That's enjambment as well as internal rhyme. So means rhymes with meaning. And then there's a caesura there as well. So we have enjambment, internal rhyme, caesura. Now let's talk about ekphrasis. This poem is an analysis of paintings. So an analysis of the art object within a literary work is called ekphrasis. The first example of ekphrasis is Achilles' shield in the Iliad. And what the shield does, it's a way for the author to step outside of the poem and attach it to the culture around it. So in the case of the shield, what Homer was doing is the description on the shield was an image of basically all of life, all of Greek life at the time. So what he does is he situates the Trojan War within Greek life and sort of makes it mean more to the Greeks that were hearing him sing it. In this case, Christina Rossetti uses ekphrasis to comment on the social conditions of women in England at the time. Imagine she's writing a poem about her brother's art studio, but really what she's doing is writing a poem about men's restricting of women's self-representation, men's silencing of women's voices. And she does this by saying, look at these paintings, they all have the exact same expression, compare this expression to the actual woman, Elizabeth Siddal, who is wan with waiting and dim with sorrow. However, Dante Gabriel Rossetti just keeps her the way he found her first. Now, we also have allegory in this poem, because the ekphrasis serves as an allegorical depiction of the life of women in the Victorian period. Now, physiological. I put physiological poetry on here. It's probably not the best name, but we'll see it a lot when I read Elizabeth Barrett Browning's poem later. What I mean by that is that the actual mechanics of saying the words are part of the argument. Let's look at the last tercet. A tercet is a three-line group. The last tercet of the sestet. Not wan with waiting, not with sorrow dim, not as she is, but was when hope shone bright, not as she is, but as she fills his dream. What we have here is 1, 2, 3, 4. We have 7 W sounds. And the W sound is a sound that expels air, so it sucks air out of your diaphragm. And also it's restrictive, because you have to you push air out at the same time that you restrict airflow to make the W sound. The tercet is about her sort of, she's expiring and getting tired at the same time. He just keeps re-represents her through all these paintings. So it's like the W sound gives this panting effect, and this effect where breath is getting pulled out of you, but it's also restrictive, right? So it gives this restricting effect, and it enacts what Rossetti is talking about here, which is the restriction of female voice, and also the damage, the physical damage that restriction of voice and representation causes. And that's what I mean by physiological poetry. Browning, Rossetti's pretty good at it. Browning is a master of it, so we'll talk about it when we talk about Runaway Slave at Pilgrim's Point. Then we have the double poem. This is a phrase coined, I think, in the 80s, but what we're talking about here is that you can have a poem with its set of figurative language, which we can unpack all the figurative language, but it'll be about something else as well. In the case of Rose, there's a saying that if you have a poem about a tree, it better not be about a tree. So that's what we're getting at. There's always a second poem behind the poem. I think one of the best examples is Christina Rossetti's Sonnet of Sonnets, which is a grouping of 14 sonnets in a sonnet sequence. So each sonnet does the work that each line of an actual sonnet would do. So say Sonnet 9 of the series would be the Volta. So it would sort of shift the argument. So the poems themselves are about one thing, but in conjunction with context and poetic situation, there's something else going on behind them. So Victorian poems are really complex. I think it's the one of the reasons is it's the first generation of poets who had easy access to print. The print revolution. Well, there are a few print revolutions, and we're going through one right now, but the print revolution sped up just about when the Victorian period started, with the advent of the Fourgeonier continuous paper making machine. So it made paper really cheap to access, so everyone had, there was just a bunch of words, so everything got more complex at that point. All right. Now let's talk about the Victorian poems themselves.